May the 24th, 1998. Another hot, brutal, dry day in Gotha, Florida, Virginia. But the inhospitable weather notwithstanding, Troy, your executive producer, say hello to our beautiful Virginia, Troy. And I have some songs to play for you and some stories to tell. We step out under the banner of Apollo, Greek god of the sun and medicine, prophecy, poetry, and music, like this. Fanfare for the Uncommon Woman. Now, the title of that piece, Virginia, practically dares you not to compare it to Copeland's Fanfare for the Common Man, which ended your last program. I think as a fanfare, it's a success in every way. All full of drama and drums and trumpets, you know, a noble thing, inspired. But, here comes your amateur critic, it does not have a melody that soars the way Copeland's melody does. Be that as it may, still a grand fanfare and appropriate to start your newest program. I had to call Stephen Brown, the music critic at the Orlando Sentinel, to determine the composer's name, Joan Tower. And it's always a pleasure to talk to Stephen. He's such an erudite, elegant, witty man. And he has one of the same qualities you do, Virginia. He's a rapt, attentive listener. The sort of man who makes you feel like the world is revolving around you. And it reminds me of how I used to come home from Washington or Paris or wherever and tell you my little stories, and you would coo and oo and make everything in my world right. So, Stephen Brown, I mention him simply because he's one of dozens of people who've had a hand in bringing you this musical moment, which continues with Shuckin' the Corn by Lester Flatt, a piece that I offer in celebration of Cameron's recovery. It may make you feel like jukin', and I encourage you to do so if the spirit so moves you. And now, Virginia, for something as smooth as that was frisky. Dave Brubeck Quartet and Blue Rondo a la Turk. I acknowledge Apollo's dominion over medicine, Virginia, by applauding your decision to forego its tender mercies. The absence of pain, especially when faced with radiation or chemo or worse, the knife, can be a powerful motivator. But I do identify with your fatigue. My friend Frank says, I pick a yellow leaf off the hibiscus and poof, down I go for a nap, which means I probably slept right through your 60th wedding anniversary. I trust there was plenty of champagne to go along with all that progeny. 27 children and grandchildren, it's enough to frighten a man. Anyway, I offer this piece belatedly in celebration of your anniversary. Two pieces, actually. One, a short take on Time and Love by Lady Jane Fellow, and two, Rosemary Clooney, belting out Hooray for Love. My buddy Dean Johnson gave me that Rosemary Clooney disc, Virginia, and every time I play it, I like it more. He's a man of broad musical taste, too. Another disc that I like more every time I play it is A Compendium of Rags by Scott Joplin. The one you're going to hear is called The Entertainer, and you may very well recognize it. It was used in the film The Sting. More quirky and beautiful piano music, Virginia, this time by the Hungarian composer Béla Bartók, whose teachers referred to him as our young Mozart, and who, like J.S. Bach, compiled a number of his pieces into teaching manuals for his children. In Bartók's case, 153 of them, into a three-volume work called The Mikrokosmos, from which you're going to hear numbers 1 and 6 from a suite of dances in Bulgarian rhythm. I first heard these pieces when a girl named Nancy, is all I can remember, played them in the practice room next to mine at the University of Richmond, and I put aside the Chopin Nocturne that my teacher had assigned me to listen to them. And as I heard them, I thought, Eureka! So I went immediately to town the next day and bought the music. And I was playing at them in this baronial room where I took my lessons, when Dr. Rufty, the old curmudgeon who was my teacher, walked in and sort of sniffed, "Mr. Rutherford, please, meat and potatoes first, and then dessert." Okay, we now move on to a little essay I'm going to read you from this Sunday's New York Times by Molly O'Neill. She writes these jewel-like little essays on food. And ever since Linda gave me the subscription to the Times, I've been hoping Ms. O'Neill, would do something on lemons, which I know to be your favorite food. And lo and behold, today she has a piece on lemons called Dr. Peelgood, How to Zest a Lemon and Other Pithy Remarks by Molly O'Neill. The simple but exacting act of zesting a lemon can engender a zen state of mind. The fruit to be scalped rests in the palm of one hand, while the other grasps the peeler and negotiates between the rind and the spongy part beneath. The rind is packed with an aromatic oil so powerful as to change the odor of a large room, not to mention adding a clean edge to savory dishes and a subtle perfume to bread and cake. The pith, or albedo, on the other hand, is dense with pectin, a soluble fiber bitter enough to wreak havoc on almost any dish. The cook must therefore tease apart this nearly inextricable mesh of pleasure and pain. Every citrus fruit is different, and only the practiced hand knows the precise force necessary to lift the golden peel from the bitter dross. Zesting is one of my favorite tasks. I like the bright, sunny taste that results, and the knowledge that I have a powerful secret ingredient. But this accounts for only part of my enthusiasm. Actually, I like the duel between good and bad, and a challenge that is altogether tactile. I'm a competitor with a weakness for games that require memory and feel. To me, contests with absolute rules and protocols are not nearly as exhilarating as anarchistic skirmishes. I'm also a fool for smell. Strands of lemon skin, as they curl through the tiny holes at the end of a zester, look and smell like threads of sunshine. What cook could resist such a wake-up call? Citrus zest has been part of almost every cuisine since the dawn of the written recipe, and yet zesting itself, so fundamental a skill, can no longer be assumed, as more and more readers seem perplexed by the term. Like the word whisk, the word zest connotes two things in the kitchen: the act of peeling, as well as its product, the outermost rind of a citrus peel. It also refers to a spirited interest or enjoyment in life, known as gusto. There is a perfect tool for zesting, one that sports a curved blade with five beveled holes at its tip. Available in cooking supply stores, a zester has small indentations on its handle for the forefinger and thumb, and when used with proper pressure, it produces perfect little strips. Many cookbooks advocate using a vegetable peeler if a zester is not available, but I find the wobbly blade more difficult to calibrate than a sharp paring knife. In either case, the cook peels away segments of the rind and then cuts them into superfine strips. The rind can also be minced, but mincing is not zesting. A long strand yields a more mellow perfume than minced bits, which are more brash in their flavor. And the difference between bold and brash is as significant as the difference between potent and bitter. At each stage, the power of the zest rests in the delicacy of the hand. The human voice, vox humana, voix humaine. Walking in Boston one night last summer, Virginia, with my friends Skip and Phil, we all three stopped dead in our tracks when we heard this girl let out the sound like you wouldn't believe. It's a high C, and she just toyed with it, danced around it. It was a most astonishing thing. And after she had finished, we could see her barely through the darkness, and we applauded and shouted bravo, to which she curtsied and said thank you. Just such a voice arrested me, Virginia, I think when I was a teenager still, and it must have been on Ed Sullivan or Ted Mack. But some aspiring diva was singing this piece from Mozart's opera, The Magic Flute, and as I say, I stopped dead in my tracks to hear it, as you will. Mozart's Königin der Nacht, The Queen of the Night. Virginiana File, Item 1. My favorite tree, Virginia, is the live oak. I prefer it, I think, even to the Magnolia grandiflora. It's a wonderful tree, stately and dignified, with lots of air between its branches. Its botanical name is Quercus virginiana. It's the perfect tree under which to grow flowers requiring filtered sunlight. But its great bonus is the resurrection fern, which grows on its innermost branches and is so called because after a soaking rain, what looks like debris on those branches sprouts into what looks like a green flat top. It's a breathtaking thing to behold. Virginiana File, Item 2. If we get enough hurricanes this season, Virginia, taking us to the letter V, you'll hear a variation on your name. Virginie. Virginiana File, Item 3. Tammy Wynette's real name was Virginia. Well, the fact that he called them dessert Virginia indicated to me that he approved of them, and I certainly do. They're wonderfully jazzy, jaunty, off-center things, and I hope you like them. Two books I want to recommend, Virginia, before I forget. They're both full of these larger-than-life Southern eccentrics, although why we Southerners get credit for being more eccentric than others, I'll never know. The first is George Garrett's The King of Babylon Shall Not Come Against You. And the second is Alan Gerganus, Last Living Confederate Widow Tells All. I recommend them both highly. And now, while we're on our southern kick still, I announce my intentions for mid-June with this piece. When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again, Hooray, Hoorah. Did you know, Virginia, that was an old Irish folk tune before it became the marching song of the Confederate forces during the Civil War? And as I say, it announces my intentions to come home to Salem sometime in mid-June, around the 15th, I think I'll be there. And I hope that you and Lee and I can go to the Hotel Roanoke for lunch or any place you'd like to recommend. And would you ask Mary Langard if she'll join us on this trip? Okay, Virginia, from a march, a stirring march, to a waltz, a short waltz, Chopin's minute waltz, in fact. My buddy Jim Shea used to kid me that it took me 6 minutes to play this, but I take comfort in the fact that even the mighty Arthur Rubinstein takes a minute and 48 seconds. Here it is, the minute waltz. On this date in 1543, Nicholas Copernicus published his finding that the sun is the center of our universe. I'm sure that Apollo, Greek god of the sun under whose banner we march, would have approved.